Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI tells young people that sacrifices made out of love for God and a desire to adhere to his truth make life rich, great, and successful. Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright leads us day by day through the Gospel of Holy Week. And film critic Peter Malone tells us about the international, an intelligent and well-paced thriller with plenty of discussions about issues and ideas. Pope Benedict XVI has told young people that sacrifices made out of love for God and a desire to adhere to his truth make life rich, great and successful. The Pope was speaking during his homily at Palm Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square. He addressed the young people from the Diocese of Rome and other regions who participated in the Eucharistic celebration as part of the 24th World Youth Day, celebrated this year on a diocesan level. Charles Collins has this report.
Pope Benedict XVI on Palm Sunday said a successful life without sacrifice does not exist. During his sermon in St. Peter's Square, the Pope spoke about what is involved in saying yes to God, saying whoever promises a good life without self-denial is not telling the truth.
Se getto uno sguardo retrospettivo sulla mia vita personale,
Pope Benedict spoke of his own experience, saying that the times he had said yes to renunciation were the biggest and most important moments in his life. The Palm Sunday ceremony began with a procession in St. Peter's Square, which recalled the entrance of the Lord into Jerusalem. Palm Sunday also serves as the Diocesan World Youth Day. At the end of the liturgy, the youth from Sydney, Australia, gave the World Youth Day cross and icon of Mary to the young people of Madrid, Spain. Sydney hosted World Youth Day last summer, and Madrid will host the next international edition in 2011.
With vivid memories of my visit to Sydney for World Youth Day, I greet Cardinal George Pell, Archbishop of Sydney, and Bishops Anthony Fisher and Julian Porges, Auxiliary Bishops of Sydney, who are together here with a large group of young Australians in order to consign to their counterparts from Madrid the World Youth Day cross and icon of Our Lady. May the great events of Holy Week strengthen your faith and inspire you to be humble witnesses of charity.
Pope Benedict spoke of the cross's journey across the planet and how we journey with it. He said, on the way of the cross, we find our own way. He said that when we touch the cross, or rather, when we carry it, we touch the mystery of God, the mystery of Christ, the mystery that God so loved the world, he so loved us, he gave his only begotten Son. I'm Charles Collins.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. Meanwhile, Pope Benedict on Monday morning told a group of young people from the Diocese of Madrid that Christ is the destination of man's journey on earth. The young people will be taking the World Youth Day cross to Madrid, where it will be taken in procession and venerated on Holy Friday. It will then journey throughout the dioceses of Spain in preparation for International World Youth Day, which will take place in Madrid in 2011. Holy Week, which begins today, is the last week of Lent, the week immediately preceding Easter Sunday. It is a time to commemorate and enact the suffering and death of Jesus before his resurrection. As my Benedictine friend, Abbot Timothy Wright, explained to me, it is only in walking through the shadows and darkness of Holy Week and Good Friday, only in realizing the horror of sin and its consequences in the world, incarnated in the dying Jesus on the cross, only in contemplating the ending and despair that the disciples felt on Holy Saturday, that we can truly understand the light and hope of Sunday morning. To be able to even better understand that light and that hope, I asked Father Timothy to be patient with me, to take me by the hand, and to lead me day by day through the Gospel in this holiest of weeks of the year.
One theme from the Gospel on Monday is we have Mary anointing the feet of Jesus. And Jesus replies to Judas's query, "Leave her alone. Let her keep this for the day of my burial." A humble act of service amid a group of people, friends, but suspicious, not understanding. And it reminds me of how many people in our world do many acts of humble service, making sure the milk is collected from outside the door, offering to go and collect some food or provisions for a housebound couple, helping to take a handicapped son for the day, giving a loaf of bread to someone who's on the street with nowhere to go. These aren't acts of great charity. They're not blazoned everywhere. They are the bread and butter of living, appreciating, loving each other. Mary anointed Jesus. We anoint people when we love them. On Tuesday, we have the first sense of trouble, again at a meal. And there is a prophecy that by Jesus that he is about to be betrayed. Jesus departs. There is a discussion, and then Jesus tells to Peter, "You will deny me three times." "It is the one to whom I give the piece of bread that I dip in the dish, the one who will betray me," says Jesus. Yes, sin at the heart of Jesus' closest friends. And sin is in the heart of each one of us. And we make an awful lot of sin. We make an awful lot of guilt. But we fail to understand that sin and guilt are past history. They're past history because every sin that has been, is being, and will be committed has been forgiven, has been redeemed in this one act of love, which is the death and sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross. Sin is past history. Guilt is not lasting. The future is in the forgiveness that we are offered. Yes, we do betray. Yes, we too deny, as Judas and Peter did. Yes, we have to say sorry. But in saying sorry, we are doing it with the confidence of knowing that Jesus has done the work of forgiveness for us on our behalf. And as we reflect on this Tuesday of Holy Week, we can think and remember what a tremendous gift this death, this suffering, this entombment, which we will celebrate later in the week, is for us. Sin and guilt are past. Life, forgiveness are the future and the present. And then we come to Wednesday. And there we read that Judas is negotiating with the chief priests a price for betraying Jesus. And the preparation is made for the Passover meal. Judas asks them, "What are you prepared to give me if I hand him over to you?" The short-term gain. And we can see ourselves always trying to find a shortcut out of difficulty, a quick answer, the lie, the deceit, the betrayal, the uncharity in our word and in our deed. Yes, that is also part of our life. Part of our life in family, part of our life in community, part of our life in the world community to which we all belong. We are betrayers, but the betrayal was in the context of a Passover meal, the meal which we continue to celebrate, to share, to give thanks for the Christ who has also made betrayal past history, challenging us to do our best to think well of people, not to criticize but to affirm, not to blame but to build up, not to put down or exploit but to serve, to hand ourselves over to be their servant. And that is precisely our lead into the fourth day, Maundy Thursday. At the evening meal of the Passover, Jesus washes the feet of his disciples. You call me Master and Lord, and rightly, so I am. If I then, the Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you must wash each other's feet. The Lord and Master washing the dirty, ragged, broken feet of his friends. An action which is repeated each year on Maundy Thursday evening at the Eucharist, when the principal celebrant washes the feet of 12 representatives. Representatives not just of the community, but of all suffering humanity, of every man, woman, child throughout the world, whose feet are dirty for no fault of their own, whose feet are full of pain through no fault of their own. And the church, through the priests, kneels, washes, and wipes those feet, not just as a symbolic act, but as a commitment to serve the poor, the needy, whether they are the homeless, whether they are the sick in hospital, whether they are the unemployed, whether they are the fractious, argumentative members of a community, whether they are the pain-filled hearts of broken husbands and wives, of abused children, or of sadly over-exalted men and women who enjoy exploiting others. Yes, washing feet is the church's way of saying, we are on your side. We love you because you are the Christ who on this night, all those years ago, washed the feet of his disciples. The Master and Lord washing their feet, and we wash each other's, not just symbolically, but in attitude, in action, in thought, in prayer, and in love. And we move to Good Friday. The Good Friday with the great account of Jesus' arrest, his trial, the two trials, his condemnation, his death. And what is it about his death which is so unique? Not just the pain, many people were crucified at his time, not just the horror of capital punishment, such a terrible curse on our world, not just the killing of innocent lives, not just the structures of society which force people to live on the very edge of death. No, the real truth, the real message is Jesus' words as he was dying on the cross. Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing. Forgiveness. What a wonderful thing to be able to do after such a painful moment. What a wonderful thing to do just as you are about to die, through such pain, agony, through misrepresentation, to be able to say, forgive those who are putting me to death. And yet forgiveness is the only way we can find peace of mind. It's the only way to peace in community, peace between peoples. Cease to be a victim. Cease to harbour the sense of exploitation and reach out to forgive. Forgive the one who persecutes, who wants to kill, who wants to exploit, who wants to violate, for whatever motive. Why? Because deep down in that person, that enemy, if you like, deep down in that other person, there is a presence of God, hidden, yes, unnoticed, inactive, silent. But to us of faith, difficult as it might be to say and to understand, there is God. And wherever God is, we affirm God's presence. Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing. We can say that as well as Jesus did. And what a challenge it is to us. And Good Friday sends that message loud and clear that it has to be at the heart of our Christian living. And from the death on Good Friday, we move to Holy Saturday. Silence. The tomb. Jesus buried in that tomb. The silence of being forgotten, of feeling nothing, of being unable to speak, of being unable to communicate, of feeling I am worthless, of feeling I'm too much of a sinner, of feeling I am beyond the possibility of love and forgiveness for all that I have done. But that silence is a moment for us to look inward, to acknowledge that Jesus died and went into that silence. And there is always another aspect to silence, a positive aspect. Not just feeling nothing, forgotten and annihilated and alienated and exploited and pain-filled, but the silence of meeting the other, of meeting a presence, of meeting, perhaps I dare say it, a different sort of love, an unconditional love, a love that cannot be put into words, a love which, when part of me, enables me to grow as other, to put aside the negative elements of myself. But in that silence, there is a question mark. There's a silence of not being sure, of uncertainty, of hope, yes, but not yet fulfillment, of desire, yes, but fear that truly I am forgotten. And in that precarious, fragile world, I sit alongside the tomb where Jesus is buried, sharing the silence that is his. And from that silence, we move to Easter Sunday. And beside the tomb, the stone moved away and the corpse gone. The risen Jesus. The risen Jesus who discovers his friends on the way to Emmaus. The risen Jesus who transforms in a moment the whole plan, the whole framework of human living. No longer forgotten, now remembered. No longer alone, now among the risen, within the risen Christ. No longer buried in pain. Now risen to new life, in love forever. And it is on that journey down to Emmaus where Jesus explains the scriptures to his two companions. They'd failed to understand them. They'd looked at them from the wrong perspective, because the only perspective is to read the scriptures as Jesus is risen from the dead. That resurrection in Jesus is the vocation of each one of us. And he says to them, I am the resurrection and the life. And that is all that's needed. Because once we have life and risen life, we have love. And once we have love, we see God everywhere. And once we see God everywhere, we're able to care. To care for those who need our support and our love. Because they too are the risen Christ. We are able to see our failure, our sin and our betrayals for what they truly are. Elements of a nature which is immature, which is ill-formed, which is fragile, which is oversensitive, which is possessive, and now can see within the gift which is risen that there is a better life. But for now it is a life of service, not of having, but of giving. of giving to those most in need, and more important, of forgiving those who seek to harm us for whatever they've done to us. Because in that moment of resurrection, in order to be able to appreciate it, I have to live the peace which is forgiveness. And that requires silence, not the silence of being forgotten, buried in a tomb, but the silence of the presence of the risen life within my heart, within the love that burns within me, within the love that has been shared with me from the risen Christ, the silence of appreciating the love that I know now go out to give on behalf of Jesus to all those who live with me, who help me, who support me, who need me, and even those who try to undermine me, abuse me, betray me. Because whatever happens now, Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. And all my vocation is simply to relive this week, every day, every hour. Because that is the message of the risen Christ, who has no walls. His love reaches the ends of the earth. To those who know him, and those who half know him, to those who don't know him, and to those who don't want to know him. For us, there are no walls to Christ. There's no limit to his forgiveness. There's no limit to our service. There's no limit to the caring that we give, recognizing that it is his work now, not ours. Thanks be to God. Amen.
And now we go over to our friend film critic, Peter Malone, who heads the film office at CIGNIS, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he tells us about an intelligent and well-paced thriller with discussions about issues and ideas. Hello, Peter, and welcome.
Hello, Linda. Thank you.
I was very impressed by the list of films you sent, branching out into all areas. I must say, you do see the most diverse films I can think of. There's everything here from thrillers to supernaturals to animation to biographies.
I just line up for whatever's released each week, and if I'm here, they're the ones that I see.
So we're starting with a very exciting-looking thriller, The International.
Welcome. Please enter your PIN number.
Well, The International stars Clive Owen, who also is in another film which we may get time to discuss called Duplicity. And the critics are all very sympathetic to Clive Owen these days because they thought that perhaps he should have become the new James Bond instead of Daniel Craig.
Oh, Daniel Craig seems to be doing such a good job of it.
He does, but they all said that in The International it proves that Clive Owen could have been James Bond just as well.
He's very simpatico, I must say.
He is, although I found, say, 5 or 6 years ago, if he smiled in a film, you wondered whether, you know, he was ill or something like that. But gradually, perhaps his career is going so well, he does smile slightly more than he used to. But in this one, of course, he has to go into action most of the time, and he does that particularly well.
Now, this film is very topical, isn't it, in this day and time of credit crunch and evil bankers.
2 years ago, we began receiving intelligence regarding the International Bank of Business and Credit. Anyone that's ever been in a position to move against this bank has either ended up dead or disappeared.
Evil bankers, certainly. And these evil bankers, at least in the film, are in Luxembourg. So I presume they have a certain amount of protection. But it's about espionage as well. Industrial espionage and crooked ways of bankers these days.
You are accusing the world's largest bank of conspiracy and murder. But there is no evidence.
Well, I watched the trailer, I must confess, and it's very enticing. It begins with, you give them your money, you trust them. What if they use your money for something else? Can you tell us what is it about?
It's better if they use it for something else rather than losing it, I think, as they seem to have been doing with billions lately. I'm afraid what this bank is doing is arms dealing.
Well, General, we can offer you much more.
Weapons, intelligence, enough logistical support to stage a successful coup.
But in exchange for what?
And I gather it's based on a true story of a Pakistani in the 80s who did this kind of thing with his bank and then, of course, was discovered. But the evil thing about it is not only the arms deals, but the bankers feel that if they have, say, an African country to whom they sell arms in a contract, then they can control them. And if there are to be coups and uprisings, the bank can wield quite an influence.
The IBBC has purchased billions of dollars worth of Silkworm missiles from the People's Republic of China.
We can't allow anyone to put our agenda at risk.
They control everything.
How would you like us to proceed?
Send a message.
So the ramifications of the investigation in the film and the various killing off of various witnesses that happens during it is quite topical in terms of the bank as well as wars in various parts of the world today.
So the money men are the new villains, right? And basically,
yes.
The story is a quest for truth and justice.
It is. It's to try to expose and, I suppose, bring to light these dealings. Clive Owen's character actually works for Interpol, and he works in cahoots with the FBI in the United States, especially in the person of Naomi Watts.
What do they know about you that I don't?
I know that there has to be a way to bring down this bank.
Which actually doesn't lead to a romance, in case anybody's thinking that would be nice to mellow the story. So rather, it is a whole lot of investigation in quite a number of cities, which makes it very interesting, and a beautiful climax, so to speak, and an unexpected one on rooftops in Istanbul.
Well, actually, in the review you sent me, your own review, of course, you speak of the impressive photography contained in this film and of the incredible shots of a whole series of international cities.
It is, and I think the director, who's a German, Tom Tykwer, who made films like Run, Lola, Run and Kieslowski's script for Heaven with Cate Blanchett, he has a very visual sense, and the photography of the buildings and, say, the first sequence is in the main station in Berlin, and so you have a very strong sense of modern buildings and atmosphere and the glass buildings, for instance, of the bank in Luxembourg, and some wonderful shots of New York City and chases through New York City. So you have that strong international sense.
I saw some wonderful shots of the Guggenheim Museum as well.
Well, that's actually where, I suppose, what do they call it in English? The pièce de résistance, where that takes place. It's an extraordinary shootout. I'd love to know how they did it in terms of reconstructing a set like the interior of the Guggenheim, because a fair amount of it gets shot at and destroyed. But it's a very tense action sequence which gets the adrenaline going. So, yes, I thought the International had a lot of things going for it.
You don't have the authority to arrest me.
Who said anything about arresting you?
Laudetur Jesus Christus.